welcome to the podcast for TheForce.net. My name's Eric, and I'm your host, bringing you the latest news and commentary from the Star Wars community. Sorry about the long delay between shows this time. I've been sick, and so I've been waiting a bit so you guys don't have to listen to me sneeze and sniffle my way through the show. As expected, I got a ton of responses on my Episode 3 review, and I'll be going over several of these today. But before we get to that, here are a couple of news items worth mentioning. Revenge of the Sith continues to do well at the box office, which is no surprise to most of us. On Thursday, it tied Spider-Man 2 for the fastest to reach $200 million in a record 8 days. As of Friday, the total U.S. gross is $215 million. It brought in $15.5 million on Friday, trailing The Longest Yard by only $200,000. However, we'll have to wait and see how the overall weekend results turn out. The only result that I really care about personally is that it eventually beat Titanic, which holds the domestic record at over $600 million. Right now, Revenge of the Sith is about a third of the way there, but that's still going to be a tough record to beat. For those of you who like to track box office numbers, there's a good site out there called thenumbers.com. That's www.the-numbers.com. Besides the rather extensive figures they track, they've also got a handy line graph showing the progression of each of the Star Wars movies over their first 50 days of release, covering both box office sales and the number of tickets sold. If you're keeping up with Episode 3's box office sales, this is a good site to check in on. Another is boxofficemojo.com, which I know some other TFN staffers use. Perhaps the biggest news item this past week is a Scoop Cinescape posted, where a fan on honeymoon in Hawaii met Lucas and asked him a rather interesting question that's got the entire fan community turned upside down. Here's what Cinescape posted from the person writing in with the scoop. He said he asked Lucas if Star Wars is going to end with this next installment, and Lucas allegedly said, "Star Wars will never end. My involvement may, but the story will go on." He then asked Lucas what would be more interesting, telling a story prior to Phantom Menace or after Return of the Jedi. Lucas said emphatically that it would be something prior to Phantom Menace. He said that if he ever did do another storyline, that he would do when the Jedi regained control of the universe from the Dark Lords 800 years before Phantom Menace, and a young Jedi named Yoda was instrumental in the effort. Cinescape points out that this story has not been and cannot be confirmed. And as a regular reader of Cinescape myself, I'd like to emphasize that point. This was not actually reported as real news. Nevertheless, fans everywhere seem to be talking about new Star Wars films based 800 years before Phantom Menace focusing on Yoda. But let's take a step back here and look at a couple of things for a moment. We're looking at something that some guy wrote into a movie website. Now, sure, he may have been telling the truth, but the inherent credibility here is nil. Now, for the sake of argument, let's say this is a legitimate source, maybe a scooper who regularly sends things into Cinescape. And let's say the story is 100% true. So taking a look at what Lucas actually said, the first response he gives, the only one actually given as a direct quote, says, "Star Wars will never end. My involvement may, but the story will go on." He could have been referring to the television series, which he expects to start rolling and then step back for other people to take on. He could have been talking about the novels, the comics. Heck, he could have even been talking merely about fan films, although I doubt it. The point is, he could have been referring to any of the upcoming Star Wars content, and we all know there's quite a bit of that down the road. As for Lucas's second response, it's not even given as a direct quote. We're given a summary of what this guy remembers from the conversation. He gives Lucas an either-or question, allowing Lucas to choose between one of two answers, and he chooses one. Then he says, though not part of a direct quote, that if he did another storyline, he'd do it from about 800 years prior to Phantom Menace, and that Yoda would be instrumental. Again, assuming the entire conversation happened at all, which for the sake of argument I'll give this guy the benefit of the doubt, I want to know exactly what Lucas said. Since we know that he said he wants to have the TV show set between episodes 3 and 4, I'll assume that this was directly in reference to movie storylines. But keep in mind, he was presented with a hypothetical question, asking that if he were going to do another series, would he prefer one thing or the other? The fact that he answered a hypothetical question doesn't suggest he plans to do anything. Not even the fact that he elaborated on a specific time frame and a specific character. All that means is that of the untold stories in the Star Wars universe, that's the one he'd have the most fun telling. In other related news, Robert Sanchez over at IESB.net followed up on this with some of his contacts at the ranch. In short, there's no official word on any further movies, but his contacts say that there's plenty of unofficial talk. Of course, this begs the question, in my mind at least, as to who's talking about this. Are we talking janitors, or are we talking certain bearded people in flannel shirts? Obviously, he probably can't say. And I'm sure they're far from being janitors, but still, I'm curious as to where they fall in the Lucasfilm hierarchy. Robert's sources believe that the Star Wars TV series will spawn off new films, possibly even standalone films. The sources elaborate further, saying that there are certain flashbacks during the television series that go back 800 to 1,000 years before the current films. Now, this certainly ties in well with the post from Cinescape. However, though the article on IESB implies that any further films might take place in this time period, the specific context of that part of the conversation with Lucasfilm isn't given. Granted, Robert needs to protect his sources, and that's cool. But I'm curious as to whether they were clearly stating that the unofficial talk going around the ranch associates future films with that time period. It could be that they were responding to Robert directly following up on the Cinescape scooper, confirming that something was being done regarding that time period. And yes, Lucas himself said things at the Celebration 3 convention that tie in with this too. When someone asked about films set in the Knights of the Old Republic timeframe, he replied saying that if the TV series did well, it's something that they might someday visit. But keep in mind, maybe was the word of the day for McCallum and Lucas at the convention. Aside from whether certain things would see DVD releases, they were pretty vague on almost everything about the future. So I wouldn't take Lucas's comments as confirmation of anything. He's just keeping his doors open. So really, we don't know anything. But then I guess this is half the fun of keeping up with the rumors, huh? Either way, it was cool that IESB followed up on the Cinescape report, and I encourage you to check out the articles on both websites to get the full scoop. I don't have any specific reason to doubt the guy who wrote into Cinescape, and I know IESB is pretty good about their sources, so I'm pretty confident that when Robert says he heard from Lucasfilm, he actually did hear from Lucasfilm. But right now, we've only got rumors of rumors. As for the TV series, the last word from McCallum was that they weren't going to start fleshing out anything serious for the TV series until after they came back from taking the month of August off. And even then, I expect things will be pretty tight-lipped for a while. So it could easily be a year or so before we start getting anything official. Still, in the meantime, it's fun to get stuff like this and speculate. But before you go around telling people that Lucas is secretly working on a new Star Wars movie set 1,000 years before Phantom Menace, where Yoda leads the Jedi to victory over a bunch of Sith Lords, take a step back and take into consideration that Lucas himself probably doesn't know what's going on yet. I doubt Lucas would even consider another film until the television show is well underway and he's already stepped back from that. Then he may consider another film, and even then it'd take him 3 or 4 years to do it. So I wouldn't get your hopes up about seeing a new Star Wars film in the next 10 years at least. For those of you looking for other Star Wars related audio, check out StarWarsFanWorks.com. The site has pages for various Star Wars audio programs, including our own podcast from TheForce.net, and many of the shows are really good. Just recently, episode 20 of Requiem of the Outcast was released, and the new episode of Star Wars on Direct will air tomorrow night. Chrono Radio's new episode will air Wednesday. If you've never checked out the site before, you should head over there. They cover a wide variety of genres, including fan audio fiction. The site, again, is StarWarsFanWorks.com. As I said earlier, I got a lot of feedback on my Revenge of the Sith review. Some people thought I was dead on, some people thought I was really off on a couple of points, and one person even sent me a one-line email telling me that I was a bloody idiot. But hey, I never claimed not to be an idiot, did I? Not so much. So it's all good. For those of you who agreed with me, I really appreciate you writing in, and I did read every single piece of email I got, but for this podcast, I'm only going to be covering the emails that argued points that I made in my review. And trust me, there were several. But before I do that, I'd like to take a few minutes and address one email in particular, and some points that don't really have anything to do with Episode 3 directly. Instead, this listener calls me out on a few things from my last podcast. Enough things, actually, that I'm going to make this my commentary piece for the show, and then I'll move on to the real listener feedback section. The single most annoying email I got was from Doug. Here's part of what he wrote near the end of the email. As I say, I loved how balanced your first reflection on the prequels was, but in the most recent podcast, you do come off as one of the proud haters. Even in your review of Episode 3, you speak very passionately about all the horrible things in the film, and then briefly, matter-of-factly, rattle off things that you like with a grade of the good outweighs the bad. Now, before I go any further with Doug's email, I want to address this. The reason this was the single most annoying email I received was because he was absolutely right. What made it an annoying email wasn't what Doug said, it was knowing that he was right and that my review was inconsistent. And I thank Doug and a few others for pointing this out. It happens to everyone at some point. We think we're saying one thing, and yet we're unknowingly communicating something else entirely. Looking back on my review, Doug's right. It seemed that about 75% of it was negative, and very passionately so, and the other quarter was dismissively positive. After seeing the movie a second time, I still stand behind the points I made in my review. However, what I desperately needed to clarify was how much each of those things were valued. I didn't give any weight to the negative points, nor to the positive. Or rather, one could argue that I did do so in the way I presented the review. So allow me a moment here to clarify my thoughts on the film. There were a lot of negative things about this film, but nowhere near as many as there were with the other two prequels. The real issue is whether those negative points are important. I think that the hit-or-miss scenes with Anakin and Padme were important. When it didn't work, it really didn't work. However, unlike in the other two films, when it did work, it was actually pretty good. And while I thought that this issue was important, it didn't ruin the film for me. I think that the fact that the film felt rushed and cramped was also important. As I said, it was as if Lucas was trying to cram 5 hours of material into 2.5 hours of screen time. This was perhaps the most important negative issue to me. But even that didn't ruin the film for me either. And really, while I stand behind what I said about all the other negative points, none of them were that important in the grand scheme of things. I still loved this film despite those issues. And there are some things that I find really annoying about the other Star Wars movies too, including the original trilogy, but I still love those films. So just to clarify, I think there were only two negative issues that really hurt the movie, and I still loved the movie despite those issues. The other thing I'd like to say is this. Anytime you do a review, the negative things you point out are almost always going to be more controversial than the positive things. If you like something other people don't, they write it off as you having bad taste. But if you dislike something they like, they feel their good taste is being attacked. So it's natural, at least for me, to explain my reasoning behind the negative points. The problem is, when I got to the good stuff, all I could think of is, wow, that was really cool. And obviously, that doesn't make for a good show. I needed to come up with something more than that. That was really cool because... But all I could come up with was, because it was really cool. I mean, did you see that space battle? How cool was that? And the big duel at the end? That was awesome. And the way Obi-Wan just totally owned Grievous? How can you not think that's the coolest thing ever? However, in an attempt to make it look like I have something a little bit higher than a third-grade education, I tried to make my points a little bit more articulate. And in doing so, they ended up totally devoid of any passion I had for the film. So, lesson learned. Doug, if you're listening, I want to thank you again for the email, and especially for bringing my attention to how inconsistent my review was. Other honorable mentions here are Matt and Danny, both of whom caught the same issues and pointed them out. Let's move on to today's listener feedback section. Paul writes in saying, "In your review of Revenge of the Sith on the podcast, you expressed disappointment that Grievous's cough is not explained in the movie. My argument to that would be, take yourself back to the original Star Wars in 1977, before its success, before a continuation with Empire, and before word got out in the early 80s that Obi-Wan Kenobi and Vader fight over a volcano. Is Vader's breathing explained in Star Wars? No. Does it need to be? No. It just is. Given the audience does eventually see that Grievous has some sort of organic makeup, I think they will not let the cough distract them from the storytelling." Well, Paul, this is the most convincing argument I've heard. My only rebuttal is this. Given the mask over his face and the electronics on his chest, we can infer that they probably had something to do with the breathing noise. Sure, we didn't know why Vader was breathing that way, but we could infer how he was breathing that way. It was a plausible concept. How does a robot cough? Or how does something happen to a robot that would cause him to cough? The concept really doesn't work. As you said, it's eventually pointed out that he's got organic makeup, but by that point, his time in the movie's basically over. And even then, I know some people who are still confused, saying, what's all that fleshy stuff the robot's keeping inside of him, and why does the robot just die when it catches fire? Isn't metal fireproof? I'm hoping that you're right, and that on subsequent viewings, people understand how he's coughing, if not why. I was surprised to find someone who didn't know what was going on with the coughing, yet was quite obviously a fan. He's read the book, played the Xbox game before the film's release, and obviously listens to the podcasts. Of course, given that it's only explained in maybe one or two sources, it probably shouldn't have surprised me. Jeff writes, you didn't mention on the podcast the reason for Grievous's coughing. Could you tell me what the coughing was all about? Sure. The events in the most recent volume of the Clone Wars cartoons covers the capture of Chancellor Palpatine on Coruscant. Several Jedi chase Grievous as he rushes back to his ship. At the last moment, Mace Windu spots him from a distance as he's standing in the hatchway of his ship. Mace sticks out his arm and closes his hand, using the force to crunch Grievous's torso, crushing his chest. Since the events of the movie take place immediately afterward, Grievous is still suffering from this injury. I haven't read Labyrinth of Evil yet, but I know it overlaps events from the third volume of Clone Wars, so it may also cover this. Broderick wrote, just a quick comment about Padme's death. You felt it was unbelievable that she would be perfectly healthy but had lost the will to live. I agree, this really didn't make sense, and it was a bit of a cop-out. Specifically, I find it weak that Padme, being such a strong character, would decide she didn't want to go on living anymore, especially now that she had two kids to live for. I don't think it's a great light to put Padme in, that she didn't even care about her children enough to go on living. Darth Malicious writes something similar, saying, what in the galaxy was that all about? I mean, I know that she was under tremendous stress and whatnot, and you're right that had the droid not opened its mouth, the scene would have worked well. But how do you lose the will to live when you gave birth to twins? I would think that she would have wanted to raise them. That would have given her a piece of Anakin to hold on to. Well, I'm embarrassed to say that I didn't even think about that side of things. I've never been in a delivery room when a woman's given birth, but I'm told that most of them are totally enraptured with the baby. I can't imagine Padme not being the same way. My only argument to this would be that she's obviously been under a lot of stress. Then she finds out her husband slaughtered all the Jedi, including the children, and that he's destroyed the democracy that she's devoted her entire life to. Oh, and he choked her to the point of being unconscious. So maybe by the time the twins are actually born, she's just too far gone, and they're not enough to save her. Of course, that might make sense if there were some physical signs of medical problems. The droid said there were none, so if it were merely a matter of willpower, then she shouldn't have been too far gone at that point, right? I don't know. I think the droid shouldn't have said anything. Having no explanation would be better than having a bad one. Darth Valius writes, to me, the fact that the droid stated that she was perfectly healthy served a purpose. As we see her giving birth and dying, we also see Anakin lying on the operating table and dying, so to speak. Another scene before shows Anakin and Padme both looking out of the window at each other from two different buildings at the same time. I think these scenes are meant to show the almost supernatural bond that exists between them. I believe that Anakin could not bear the thought to live without her, so did Padme. I think that is why Lucas wanted us to know that she died in perfect health, to underline the strong bond between the two. I find this idea extremely romantic, and it beats the hell out of having Padme die from stress. Fair enough, but still, when I hear about somebody who can't bear the thought of living without somebody else, I see that as just a figure of speech. If this is what Lucas was trying to get across, it's a pretty literal interpretation. And the only people I've ever known of who have died after losing the will to live already had medical issues of some sort. I guess it just seemed distracting to me. The droid said he could find nothing wrong with her, and I was like, huh? She was fine until her husband knocked her out cold. Now she's dying. Coincidence? I don't think so. That being said, I understand what you're saying, and I agree that Lucas may have been trying to get such a point across in this way. I don't like it, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter much, and it doesn't really affect my enjoyment of the film. And as you pointed out, Lucas did a great job with cutting between the two scenes, both times in the film. The balcony scene was without question one of the better shots he'd done to establish the bond between Anakin and Padme, and cutting back and forth between the two scenes at the end not only tied together the deaths of Padme and Anakin, but also the births of Luke and Leia and Darth Vader. Ian wrote, I think your dissatisfaction with the fact that Padme died simply because she lost the will to live is misplaced, because it is, in fact, a vital element in the film. I believe this was done to bring out the irony of Anakin's vision of Padme dying in childbirth, and his subsequent actions taken because of it. It was put there to show that there was nothing medically wrong with Padme, thus Anakin's main motivation for turning to the dark side, to gain the power to save her was all for nothing. Well, I agree that it was all for nothing, but the way I see it is that he killed her. Unintentionally, of course, but through the breaking of her heart, if you will, combined with the force choke, he killed her. And that, to me, is the irony. His anger, having been brought on by him joining the dark side in order to save her, actually ended up killing her. But if he hadn't joined the dark side, she wouldn't have needed saving. I agree with your general points about the irony, but I still think it would have worked otherwise. Travis wrote in and expressed some disappointment that the conversation between Yoda and Obi-Wan at the end of the film was so much shorter than it was in the book, and that so much of its content would have wrapped up some important elements of the story. He goes on to say, secondly, I could have done without all the scenes of CGI ships taking off and landing. I don't know how many minutes combined this wasted, but I would have loved to see more story. I wish Lucas would realize that we don't love Star Wars for the eye candy, but for the story. I'm not sure how many minutes those scenes added up to either, but I know that in some places throughout the film, a few lines of dialogue here and there that were cut would have been nice to have put back in. The problem with the shots you're referring to is that they're establishing shots. They're basically introducing the scene, showing where it takes place, whether it's day or night, whether it's in the midst of a battle or not, whether it's inside a particular building, etc. Like it or not, it's a part of a filmmaking technique that Lucas can't really get away from. That being said, I'm sure some of them could have been trimmed down a little bit. Fortunately, I think Episode 3 had fewer useless visual distractions than many of the other films. Alon wrote in with a question many people are wondering about. He says, what I would like to know is this. Is Palpatine really Anakin's father? Palpatine's way of looking at Anakin while saying he even found a way to create life makes me conclude that this is what Lucas wants us to think. Do you personally view this the same, or heard any official news on this issue? I personally am in favor of the Palpatine theory more than a divine force theory, which was, to my understanding, the only explanation until I saw Episode 3. Nothing official has been said about it. I know that Lucas has caught some flack over the religious overtones behind the Immaculate Conception and Virgin Birth of Anakin, and I remember hearing stories years ago that his intention was that Palpatine manipulated the midichlorians in Anakin's mother in order to give birth to a child strong in the force that he could later take from her. But there's been no official explanation, and I expect that we won't get one either. As for the divine force theory, I know that Matthew Stover had said at the Celebration 3 convention that one of the only things Lucas asked him to change was that in his interludes describing the dark, which was an allusion to the dark side of the force, Stover's description made it sound as if the dark side of the force was almost a sentient being, like some sort of a demon or devil. I don't think Stover was trying for that, but Lucas felt it was getting a little too close, so he asked Stover to pull it back a little bit. So it sounds like Lucas doesn't want either side of the Force to become personified. So I think we can safely eliminate the Divine Force theory. Ken wrote in about Kashyyyk, saying, you stated that you thought the scenes on the Wookiee homeworld didn't work for you. I disagree. Don't you think that they were put in to provide a break in the monotony of all the dialogues that comprise the second act of the film? I thought that they were a necessary relief from all the talking that was going on. In all fairness, Ken, I'd probably have to pay closer attention to that point the next time I see it and assess what I think. You've definitely got a valid point, though. Personally, I think that there was plenty of action in the film, but it's possible that removing that particular scene may have adversely affected the pacing. It's a tough call. Also, other people pointed out that not only was it a way to get Yoda off of Coruscant, but that it was also a way to show how he got around Order 66. And I'm okay with that explanation, too. Overall, I enjoyed the scenes on Kashyyyk. I thought they looked great. I just felt that if a decision had to be made between it and the petition scene, that the petition scene may have been more important to the story. Though while that may be true, perhaps Kashyyyk was more important to the film. Perhaps it's that difference between telling a story and making a film that was the determining factor. An anonymous listener wrote in and said, I agree with your analysis of the romantic dialogue between Anakin and Padme contrived by Lucas. However, I don't think that it was all that distracting from the story. I think of all the things that I said or wrote to my wife and all the things I overhear other young couples say to each other, and I can't help but thinking that it's pretty much all the same unappetizing fare for someone else to witness. Maybe it doesn't work as good on-screen drama, but it was tolerable and plausible as something a young couple would say, as compared to Attack of the Clones especially. I do agree that he should have showed us the tension and passion in their relationship. The hold me like you did on Naboo line was awful, and the onset script rewrites of Lucas' dialogue that occurred with Kirshner saved Empire Strikes Back. Showing, telling, I'll never forget grade school teachers drilling this into my brain. My main quibble, if you'll allow, is your comment of Padme being barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. You mused about cutting Kashyyyk altogether and instead seeing a scene of Padme the Senator submitting proposals. While I agree that Padme was a much weaker character in Revenge of the Sith, I disagree with your assessment that Kashyyyk's scene served only the dual purposes of getting Chewbacca in the movie and Yoda off Coruscant. It does do those things, the latter of which seems fairly important to the story. However, it does more. It establishes the overall scope of the conflict. It gives a sense that the entire galaxy is embroiled in war, adding to a sense of chaos. This works well dramatically as it occurs simultaneously with the peak of confusion within Anakin as he makes the fall, and the beginning of the destruction of the Jedi by Order 66. Senator Padme submitting petitions doesn't move the story and doesn't seem all that relevant to Anakin's transformation into a Dark Lord of the Sith. Remember, her main role in this latest film is quite different than in the others, and while it would have been great to have more character consistency, she is the mother of our heroes for the next three episodes. That, in my opinion, is her function. That Palpatine gains enormous amounts of power in the time of war doesn't need to be explained. It wasn't by revolution that the Emperor rises in the Galactic Senate. We saw in Attack of the Clones that the Chancellor was granted special executive powers, and again in Revenge of the Sith, Obi-Wan comments that the Senate was to grant him even more power, which Anakin thinks is a great idea. It's pretty much the way to totalitarianism that is familiar to us throughout history. There are many other ways to strengthen the Padme character without adding a meaningless Senate scene. And finally, the differences of opinion between Anakin and Padme was given well enough treatment for its purpose in the movie. You sound like a separatist, Anakin says with a scowl. I thought there could be more tension with the Council. Anakin waffles, and the way it's done is effective, but could be better. Well, personally, I agree with your last point about Anakin and the Council. But while you've got some very logical, intelligent points, I think we may have to agree to disagree. I found the separatist comment somewhat out of place considering the lack of any other such tension between the two of them, and I don't think it was sufficient for what was going on with the story. Were the scene in question another meaningless Senate scene, similar to the scenes in the other two prequels, I would agree with you. However, this was a scene with a small group of senators that took place in Palpatine's office, not on the floor of the Senate. And the importance of the scene isn't so much its own content, as much as it is that it shows more than merely a difference of opinion between Anakin and Padme, it shows them working counterproductively against each other. Anakin blindly supports Palpatine, and he can't see why Padme has issues with him. And on Mustafar, before he sees Obi-Wan on the ramp, he accuses Padme of turning against him. Anakin feels like the Council has betrayed him, and he's unsure about Obi-Wan, but he's never been unsure about Padme, even when he meets her after having slaughtered the Jedi in the temple. There's not been any conflict between them, and aside from the separatist comment, there's barely even any tension. Sure, the movie works without the scene, but I feel it would have been more useful to the story than having Kashyyyk. And as for portraying the scope of things, I do see your point, but I think that Kashyyyk could have still had some screen time without the battle scenes, and I think that the shots during Order 66 do a lot to portray the scope of the war. I'll concede the point about the romantic dialogue, though I have to say I agree completely with another listener who wrote in saying the I love you more, no I love you more conversation sounded like something out of grade school. Garth has an interesting perspective on the final duel. He writes, "The one thing that I was let down by was the Anakin-Obi-Wan duel. Not because it wasn't a good lightsaber duel, it was great, but the way everyone involved in the production had been talking it up for 3 years as the greatest duel ever committed to celluloid, or digitized, whatever, I felt it was a bit anticlimactic. I'd expected a much more intense, focused fight, which would have allowed some more of the personal emotion between the two characters to come out. Compared to the Vader-Obi-Wan duel in A New Hope, which was as much verbal as physical, this one felt a little bit underwhelming." Okay, I know he is not referring to the fight choreography when he's calling this underwhelming compared to A New Hope. So in that context, I don't know, I guess in some ways I agree with him. I mean, I think the hype about it being the greatest duel in film history was primarily about the choreography and directing. But aside from that, I don't know, I thought that the final duel had a good amount of emotion behind it. There were very dramatic moments both before and after the fight, and obviously it's kind of difficult to have anything during the fight. Though there were enough times when they were separated because of their terrain that they would have had time for some dialogue, I think Lucas may have had the right idea keeping them silent. While some of the film's best dialogue took place on Mustafar, it's still quite a gamble suggesting Lucas should have added more. I think the look on Christensen's face and McGregor's body language communicated sufficient emotion for the scene. I think that I agree with you about the feel, though. I don't think it was so much the lack of dialogue as much as it was that we weren't on the edge of our seats. Most people don't watch a football game if they know who wins. Sure, they might go back and watch it anyway so they can see some of the individual plays, but the game's not going to hold any excitement for them. It's the same way here. In Revenge of the Sith, we know how the fight's going to end. And all things considered, I think Lucas did pretty well with that. But in A New Hope, we had no idea what was going to happen. It was hard to believe that this old man could stand up to Darth Vader, yet Lucas wouldn't kill off a good guy like that, would he? But then he wouldn't kill off the villain that early in the film either. So what was going to happen? We had no idea. And I think that's really where the difference in the feel was. Matthew wants clarification on a popular opinion. He writes, "You mentioned that you consider Episode 5 the best of them all. I was wondering why you think that, and for what reasons. I hear this opinion a lot, and was wondering what specifically you feel sets it apart from the other films." Well, I don't want to take up too much time on that here, because this could be an entire podcast show in itself. In fact, I'm going to be doing reviews of each of the films before too long, and I'll explain my opinion in depth later on. Here's the short version. Lucas is good at coming up with stories. Irvin Kershner is good at directing. Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill are all good actors. And in this film, you really had the best of all the worlds. You had Lucas coming up with the story and yet staying fairly hands-off when it comes to directing, and Irvin Kershner was able to pull good performances out of Ford, Fisher, and Hamill. The film has a good, strong first act, then the second act is split into two parts, each concentrating on just two people, either Han and Leia, or Luke and Yoda. Not only did Kershner direct these well, but he also allowed some flexibility in the dialogue. The perfect example is the classic "I love you, I know" scene between Han and Leia. And then finally, the third act ends with a vastly improved lightsaber battle, along with a plot twist that knocks the audience off their chairs. And when you think about it, almost every single character went through some type of transition in this film. So in this film, you had excellent directing, good acting, better dialogue, higher intensity level, and a really good plot twist. So looking back at the entire saga, I think it's pretty easy to see why a lot of people prefer this over the others. I want to thank everyone again for writing in. Most of the feedback was about what I expected. A lot of you agreed with me and a lot of you didn't. But that's the nature of movie reviews. Everyone's opinion is going to differ a little bit from everyone else's. And hey, I'm not perfect. I'm just a fan like the rest of you guys. And as time goes on, I'm going to give more and more commentary, and some of you guys will agree with what I say and some of you won't. And that's cool. Anytime you guys think I'm off the mark on something, shoot me an email. I try to write back as often as I can, and when possible, I'll even include responses on the show. And maybe sometime down the road, if the circumstances are right, I may even do the occasional phone interview with some of you, and we can record a discussion for the show. But for now, that about wraps things up. As always, the opinions expressed in this podcast are my own or those of the listeners who wrote in, and do not reflect those of any other TFN staff members nor of Lucasfilm. TheForce.net is not affiliated with Lucasfilm in any way. Until next time, take care, and may the Force be with you.